back to Stories to Dismember. You are hanging out with me, your host, Aaron, and I am here with my two co-hosts, Ariel and Azrael. Yo, yo.
Ooh, hello.
What's up? Hello. Hello. Hey. What's going
on? Creepy Echo. Ghost. And this week we are continuing our Celtic Horror Movie Month with the 1982 movie Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. And this pick comes to us from our very own Azrael. You'd like to tell us why we went with this movie on this episode?
Yeah, well, it's part of, I mean, I know it's not supposed to be part of the Halloween movie trilogies, but I really like the movie when I seen it. You know, I think a lot of people, when it came out, I think they probably assumed Michael Myers was going to be in it, and of course he's not. And
There is a cameo.
Yes, there's I think like two references.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've loved the movie since I've seen it, and although it's not directed by John Carpenter, I still get that vibe from it that they were trying to give, you know, some of his visions in it.
Yeah.
And it was his idea that Michael Myers' character was never to continue. It was only supposed to be that first movie, and if he had done other ones, it would have been a different main, a different character. So,
all right, yeah, and this one, if you're going through the original Halloween movies and you get to this one, you don't know anything about it, you might think, "What's going on here?" But like you said, too,
I was very confused. This is my first time watching it. I was sold with just two words: John Carpenter. And I was like, hell yeah. So I was totally down for this movie. And then I was like 20 minutes in and I'm like, wait, is this this is part of the franchise? And I just had to keep reminding myself it was part of the franchise. I think they should have just named this film Season of the Witch. Mm-hmm. Maybe Halloween, like Halloween question mark.
It takes place on Halloween, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't say that I was able to really find the threads. I don't think there were any, but I do have some, like, I don't know. This movie was very cool. I think if you just go into it, not associating it with the Halloween franchise, I think you'd have a better experience.
Definitely. I agree. Well, all right. If you guys are interested in jumping into it, if you're ready, Azrael, to be our guide and maybe give us a lowdown on this movie and we can discuss it, get into it.
Yeah, this movie is, all right, so the movie stars, I just go over the cast. You have Tom Atkins. He plays Dr. Dan, let's see if I mess up his last name.
That's right, you could just Dan call Chalice. Him Dr. Dan.
Yeah, Dr. Dan Chalice, Tom Atkins.
Dr. Dan, Dr. calling Dan. Dr. Dan.
Yeah, Chalice. And then we have Stacey Nelkin. She plays Ellie Grimbridge. Dan O'Hurley is Connell Cochran. Any other names stuck out? Nancy Kiles was Linda Chalice, is Dr. Dan's ex-wife. And I don't think there was anybody else major. I know Tom Atkins, he's been in a few of other John Carpenter's movies, like Escape from New York, and was he in a thing? He was in a couple other ones, though.
He's been quite a few horror movies.
Yeah.
He's been around a while, yeah.
And then Dan O'Hurley, the Connell, I always just remember him from RoboCop, the CEO of OCP. Kind of played the same character almost. All right, so yeah, we can get into the movie. So the movie starts off by establishing that the events are currently taking place on the evening of Saturday, the 23rd, in the month of October. And as I go through the rest of the movie, there's similar scenes as they're advising you the day and leading up to Halloween night. So we find an older gentleman is being pursued by men in suits. His name is Harry Grimbridge, and he's on foot running. And we do notice that he's carrying looks like a jack-o'-lantern mask. At one point, I think he encounters one of the men in suits in like a junkyard and manages to, as the guy's choking him, he manages to pull like one of the bricks that's holding a car tire, like chalk tires, and crushing this guy in a suit. So the movie ended up jumping transitions like an hour ahead to like a service station, and there's like a lonely attendant on duty. He's reading the paper, watching TV, and this is the first scene we get of the Silver Shamrock Novelties commercial with a catchy jingle advising about Halloween coming up and the three masks that they offer from the company, which are the skeleton, jack-o'-lantern, and a witch. And the commercial also tells people that there's 8 more days to Halloween. That's in the lyrics. And then as the movie progresses, the lyrics will change, advising how many days are left. So the man from the beginning of the movie, Harry, who was getting chased down, ends up reappearing at the gas station, scaring the attendant. He appears to be like physically exhausted, and he clenches onto the employee's shirt before he ends up falling to the ground. But before he passes out, he pulls the jack-o'-lantern mask, like we've seen in the commercial from Silver Shamrock, out, and he just repeats the words, "They're coming," before passing out. So the attendant ends up leaving with the man, takes him to the hospital in a tow truck. And as the tow truck's driving away, we get a quick shot of one of the other men in the suits. Okay, so now next scene after from leaving at the service station, we catch up with Dr. Dan at his ex-wife's house. And he has brought his two kids some Halloween masks. Which, did you guys catch who the wife was? I know it was only a brief scene.
No, I didn't. Did you recognize her? Who is it?
Mm-mm. She was from Halloween. She played Nancy Loomis in the first Halloween movie. You didn't see it. I know that. I forgot.
Well, no. I've seen the first Halloween, but who is Nancy Loomis?
That was, Laurie's friend. She was the one that...
Was she the one that says speed kills?
Yep, speed kills. Hey, creep, speed kills. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I figured that's who Nancy was. I don't know why, but okay.
So, and this, it's a brief scene while he's there, and you know, he had brought these cheap 70s 80s looking masks that have a little elastic band holding it on, usually snapped as soon as the kid would put it on.
Little plastic mask.
Yeah, cheap, can't breathe in them, sweating. And the kids obviously didn't like them, and they brought out the skeleton and witch masks that their mom bought, which were the Silver Shamrock masks. And in this brief scene, you know, they were kind of learning that this is him and his wife are separated or divorced. And she does make a reference to Dr. Dan that he has a drinking problem. But while he's at the house, he ends up getting paged. He has to go into the hospital because a patient that had just been brought in. When we get to the hospital, we find out that the patient was the man from the beginning that was getting chased down. The attendant from the gas station had brought him in. And while the initial assessment Dr. Chalice is performing, in the background, we can hear the Silver Shamrock commercial being played on TV, and the old man manages to get enough strength to say that they're going to kill us all before passing out.
I like the fact that the guy who brought him in, the tow truck driver, you know, he was like, you know, I was always told to help somebody if they need help, unless there's going to be trouble. There's going to be trouble. You know, when that guy wakes up and says, they're going to, you know, kill us all, whatever, he like looks at him and just like fast walks out of the hospital.
Yeah, he just like backs out of that, yeah. Like so like, quickly.
Which is a smart move.
Very smart. That guy has a very iconic looking face. I wouldn't be surprised if he was in other stuff. And I looked him up. His the actor's first name is Essex.
Yes, Essex Smith.
Yeah. He's got a very, very unforgettable face.
Yeah, he's got a strong jaw. Yeah.
Yes. So they eventually get Harry to his own room. You know, he's resting, and in comes in one of these men in the suits. They got their O.J. Simpson gloves on, and while Harry's sleeping, the man gouges out his eyes, and then he snaps the nasal bone, killing him. The man in the suit then exits the hospital and gets inside his vehicle, where he proceeds to douse himself in gasoline and set himself on fire. So then we now go to the morning of the 21st or 24th, and we're still at the hospital. Police have now come on scene. You know, they're investigating the murder. Ellie Grimbridge enters the room, and we learn that she was the daughter of the man, and she identifies that, you know, it was her father. Dr. Chalice eventually goes on to talk to one of the nurses about the man in the suit who set himself on fire. And she says that the only thing that they were able to find in the vehicle was a pile of ashes, which, you know, the doctor seems to be kind of perplexed by this, that if someone sets themselves on fire, that they shouldn't just turn to ash. There should be something left. So then we jump to Friday the 29th, and Dr. Chalice is at a bar drinking by himself. And then this is another reference to the Halloween movie on TV when Dr. Chalice tells the bartender to change the channel. We get a commercial for Halloween the movie, which is supposed to air before the Silver Shamrock. They call it the big giveaway at 9 p.m. on Halloween night. So at the bar, Ellie ends up catching up with the doctor and starts talking to him about her father. And Dr. Chalice tells her, you know, that the circumstances basically around her father's death, you know, has been bothering him, and he can't make sense of, you know, how he had the Halloween mask and the warning that he was giving everybody how they were going to be killed. So Ellie takes Dr. Chalice to her father's store, and she tells him how she's, you know, started her own investigation to try to figure out, you know, what happened to her father. And she uses the store ledger to establish that, you know, a time frame of when something must have happened to him. And it looks like the last trip that he had made to the Silver Shamrock factory is when those events took place. So Dr. Chalice and Ellie eventually drive to the town of Santa Mira, which is the hometown of the Silver Shamrock factory.
I have something to say. This is where I kind of have an issue with the movie. There's a couple dying words that the mechanic guy says before he passes out, and, you know, before, yeah, I think he passes out twice, right?
Yeah.
First one, they're coming. They're coming.
Yes.
And then the other one is they're going to kill us. Right. I think being a little bit more specific, the masks are going to kill, you know, like maybe that would be a better line as your dying last words to kind of tip people off. I think that if he did know what he did, he should have been a little bit more specific. Give some information if you're going to pass out.
Not just a vague.
Right. Not just the vague thing. Just, you know, if you think you're going to die, just give us a name or give us something to go off of. Right. Not they're coming. So that was my only issue with his character.
He wants them to do legwork.
Right. Exactly. Well, his daughter is going to do the legwork. She was already doing legwork. She was doing legwork throughout this whole film, to be honest, in more than one way. And I just, you got that one. I just, yeah, I felt like he could have been a little bit more forthcoming about the information he knew. And, maybe we would have got through this movie a lot quicker. Not that it was too long. It was very entertaining.
So on the, as Dr. Chalice and Ellie are headed to Santa Mira, Dr. Chalice gives like a little background into the town, and that it was a dairy community in the late 1800s. And then after World War II, that this wealthy Irishman, Connell Cochran, had converted it into the Silver Shamrock Novelties Factory. And now that the community is now predominantly of Irish descent. So as they're driving through this town, it looks to be very quiet. We do get a few glimpses of people inside their stores looking out, but there's like almost nobody on the street. And they do give like a quick glimpse of a surveillance camera high up on a pole that appears to be monitoring the town. So Dr. Chalice and Ellie decide to go to a hotel where they pose as a married couple. And they get a room. While the hotel worker is helping Ellie, Dr. Chalice manages to sneak into the hotel office to check out their ledger and is able to confirm that her father did stay at that same hotel. Later on that night, Dr. Chalice had, I believe, went to a liquor store because he had like a bottle in a bag. And while he was leaving, there was like another scene of a surveillance camera scanning the streets. And Dr. Chalice ends up running into another guy. I don't know if he was homeless. He did appear to be probably intoxicated, and he starts asking questions about Connell Cochran, and this homeless guy doesn't really care for Cochran, and he just basically gives a warning to Dr. Chalice to be careful, that he's probably under surveillance and they're watching him. And he does kind of leak out that there may be a plot in place to destroy the factory on Halloween with Molotov cocktails. So this homeless guy, you know, he ends up leaving, and he gets caught by the men in suits. And in this scene, they gouge a dude's eyes out and rip off his head this time, twist it off.
Yeah, it was a little too easy how they did that.
Yeah, I didn't think it was that easy.
Wouldn't it be great if this guy, this character, just like stumbled on into the dark, and then we never see him until the end, and he's the one that actually saves the day?
That would have been interesting.
That would have been cool. Why not, you know?
Yeah.
If you introduce a homeless guy in the first act, he's got to throw Molotov cocktails in the third act.
He's the hero. That would have been interesting.
That's Chekhov's homeless guy right there. That's that theory.
Yeah, there you go. So the next scene, Dr. Chalice eventually calls in to the hospital where he works at to check in with a nurse to get an update on the ashes from one of the men in the suits that set himself on fire. And then the nurse tells the doctor that she believes there was perhaps a mistake in what the evidence that was collected, or the samples, because the only thing that she was finding from her analysis was that there was no human remains. It was a plastic and metal shavings. So later on that night, in a next room over at the hotel, one of the other patrons, who was a store owner, had one of the tags from the Silver Shamrock mask. It's a little circle. And she's looking at the back of the tag and notices that there's like a computer chip. And she starts prodding at it. And then like a blue beam of light zaps her and melts her face. And while her melted face, I think like a bug, a wasp or something, crawls out of her eye socket.
That's a Jerusalem cricket.
Did you? Is it really?
Yeah. No. Yeah, that's what they're called. I was kind of confused about the whole cricket scene. It was very hard to pay attention to the cricket because her face looks terrifying. It's so gross. I mean, she just got laser beamed to the face. And I got to say, the effects, pretty good, pretty gross.
Yeah, they weren't bad for the late 80s.
They were unsettling, for sure. 80s. Yeah, the eye gouging scene. I mean, some of the effects look, you know, rubber, but I guess that's why I kind of like it.
Okay. So Dr. Chalice and Ellie eventually end up going to the actual Silver Shamrock factory. And while talking with one of the employees there, she's able to find out that her father did go there to pick up an order on the 21st. She does inquire to, like, if they found out where he was going, if they remember anything else. And the employees saw that they didn't recall any other information. So while they're about to leave, this family comes in, the Kump family. Like, the guy's name was Buddy. He was there for a factory tour. Their store apparently had been the top seller of these Silver Shamrock masks. So while they're down there, this is when we get the first appearance of Connell Cochran. So, you know, he greets the family and then introduces himself to a Dr. Chalice and Ellie, who they both use the name of Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And they end up going along with the family, with Buddy's family, to do the factory tour. During the tour, as they're walking around the facility, there is one part that is the final processing, and it's a separate room that appeared to be, I don't know if it was a secure door, but it was locked up. It was separate from the rest of the factory. And Buddy talks about, you know, wanting to go in there, but Cochran tells him that, you know, it's off limits. I think he said it was trade secrets. They were kind of insistent, along with Dr. Chalice, about going to check it out. And Cochran just says that because of the dangerous chemicals that they weren't able to go in there. Dr. Chalice and Ellie eventually start leaving the factory. As they're walking out, they notice there's multiple men in suits standing around in various places around the factory. They appeared almost like mannequins standing there just watching. I think all their suits match too. And while they were outside one of the factory garages, when it was opened, she notices that her father's car, the station wagon, was inside. So they end up going back to the hotel, and they start trying to figure out what they're going to do. They formulate a plan, and Ellie ends up packing up all their stuff while Dr. Chalice decides he's going to go try and call the police. So yeah, they got so Dr. Ellis and Ellie, they go back to the hotel. They start talking about, you know, what their next step is going to be. You know, Ellie starts packing up the clothes, and Dr. Chalice goes up to the hotel office to use the phone, and he calls back in to the
he does call the office quite a bit just to flirt with the other doctor, because he had called her for like a status, and she was like, I went through all the ashes and I couldn't even find any human remains. It's all car parts. And then that's when you're like, oh, these people are robots.
Ah,
because doesn't he find the automaton chick that's, or the old lady that's knitting when he's going on the tour?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had a feeling that's where this was going, because I'm like, they took off that guy's head way too easily. And also, when they were strangling him the first time, the mechanic dude, the car like just rolled towards him, and he just looked at the car as it was rolling towards him and didn't care at all. Like, didn't try to hop out of the way. He just got crushed. I like how he didn't mention the sex part. I was like, whoa, there is... I mean, there has to be sex, right? It's a Halloween movie.
Right.
But I thought it was kind of funny, because as soon as they went to that town... they were like in the hotel room, and they're like, oh, are we sharing a room? And then he just looks at her and he's like, yeah. And they just start making out and having sex.
Right.
And then later on, she's like wearing lingerie, and then they just have sex again. I'm like, where did you get this lingerie? Did you bring that with you? She probably did, to be honest. Handy. But she did pack light. Remember that lady was like, yeah, pack light. It was just the lingerie in the suitcase. That's all she had.
That's all she had. She was thinking ahead.
Yeah, you do get a little bit of boob in this movie, but not enough. Like, it's like all blurry, you know, because she's like behind the shower, and then there's some booby action later on. But I'm like, why is this even in here? I mean, I guess, yeah, it has to be in there because they have to like have some sort of romantic interest with each other. But man, Dr. Dan, the ladies man, in here, he's like... telling the nurse, like, I would have, if I could go back, I would have married you, grabbing her ass. And then he's flirting with the other doctor chick, and he's having sex with his patient's daughter. I mean, this guy is like HR's nightmare.
Former patient's daughter.
Former. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, he's dead and in the ground, right? So why does he care? You know, he's like, look, I had sex with her after he died. Okay.
Yes. Oh, yeah, I skipped the sex scene.
Don't worry, I covered it for you.
Oh, I got you. Yeah, they were just, they were too busy in the act to further investigate the sound.
Yeah, as the other lady was getting laser beamed in the face, they were doing it. They were going at it.
What was that?
Getting That's some it. Leg work done.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Yeah, I think I did. Yeah, the other scene we had talked about, the... I know he called and checked in with that the nurse at the hospital or doctor. And when she talked about, they went through all of the samples from the car and it was just the car parts, no human remains. There is a scene, a brief scene, as the doctor hangs up and he was about to exit. There was like a listening device that was like on the counter. So whoever's listening with the Cochrane was listening, but somebody heard the entire conversation because he told the nurse to look into, that was before they went to the factory. But he told the nurse about...
Yeah, that whole town is bugged. And they have like a 6 p.m. curfew, which is wild.
Yeah.
I don't want no riffraff on the streets late at night.
Well, and didn't the homeless guy say, too, that Cochrane only hires people from outside of town? He will not hire anyone inside the town?
I think he did make a reference. Yep, I believe so. That's why he couldn't get a job. That's kind of why he was disgruntled.
Well, he was just out of a job because Cochrane came in and wouldn't hire anyone. Right. And the only people that worked were people that just, you know, essentially served the workers and the tourism.
Yeah, it's runs a tight ship, Cochrane. When Dr. Chalice did go to the back to the office to use the phone again, he had gotten the there was no line. He just operator, the recording was saying, you know, we can't complete your call, with the Silver Shamrock music playing in the background again. And we do get the notification that now it's one more day left until Halloween. So Dr. Chalice ends up going back to the hotel room, and he notices that the door was open and Ellie at this point is missing. And then we find out that Ellie was taken by the men in suits to the Silver Shamrock factory. Dr. Chalice does manage to find a payphone, but he's not able to get a phone call. He still keeps getting the same recording from the operator to tell him to hang up and try again. So while he's on the phone trying to you know, make other calls, one of the Silver Shamrock, I don't know if you'd say security cars or company cars, is driving around, maybe on their nightly curfew patrol. Dr. Chalice ends up making it to the, or sneaking inside the Silver Shamrock factory. This is the scene, I think you talked about the, you mentioned about the robot as he's walking around. He finds
Oh, my bad. Did I jump ahead? My bad.
I think they may have did it. I don't remember if it was the initial tour.
When they were doing the factory tour, he was showing all the other automatons that he had created, and everybody called him like a genius. And you know. So when I saw the knitting lady, I was like, oh, it's like a life-size automaton. And assuredly enough, it was. And he even references later, like, man, this one was made in Germany. This one was the best one I had.
Oh, right. It was a creepy-looking robot.
Yeah. Have you guys seen, like, the life-size automatons that are in museums and stuff?
No. Did they look like that?
They don't look like that. No, I don't know if there's any like human ones that I know of, but there's like one that's really cool. It's like a whole scene of like a pond with koi fish and birds. And I forgot the history behind it. I think it was like gifted to an emperor, but it's ginormous. It's like the world's largest automaton.
Really? I'll have to look it up now.
Yeah, it's really cool. If I find a link, I'll send it to you. But yeah, I can come up with the name too if you give me some time.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that'd be interesting. Yeah, so this particular robot, I mean, it looked real enough to Dr. Chalice to where he thought it was a real woman, and he shakes her because she's not answering him, and her head falls off, and that's when you see the insides that, you know, it's the robot. And at this point, one of the other men in suits come up from behind him, and they start fighting, or, well, he's trying to fight, and Dr. Chalice is trying to throw some blows, but the man in the suits starts just picking him up, kind of like Terminator, and toss him around. Probably trying to go for his signature eye gouge move. So while they're tussling around on the ground, Dr. Chalice manages to get the upper hand and get on top of him and goes for some gut punches. And on one of the final punches, he punches through his abdomen and straight into his body. And his hand's covered in like goo, realizing that it's a robot. He pulls up, I'm assuming it looked like a wire, but this like goo stuff starts coming out of the man in suit's mouth. And at this point, some of the other men in suits appear, and Cochrane walks in, and he starts talking about the first robot that he's seen, the woman, and about her from like the 1700s, I think like 1785, and that she was made like in Munich, Germany.
I found the name of it. It's the Silver Swan.
Oh, Silver Swan. Okay. I'll have to look it up. So Dr., you know, they're holding him up, Dr. Chalice, and he still appears to be like in a shock as far as what's happened right now with the robots. And Cochrane starts talking about, you know, in the morning it's going to be Halloween. And he already knows everything. Basically appears that Cochrane knows the rundown of who Dr. Chalice is. So then we're now, it's morning, it's Sunday, it's Halloween, and at the factory, you know, they still have Dr. Chalice in custody, and they take him to like the maybe subterranean level of the factory. And at this point, we see like cameras and scientists everywhere, monitors, and then there is like a giant stone structure that they have like scaffolding around it, and they look like they're working on it. And Cochrane refers to it as ancient technology.
Well, I think earlier in the movie, when they were like switching channels, there was like a newscast of something that was stolen, and it was like one of the Stonehenges that were stolen.
Oh yeah, at the service station.
That's what he essentially stole it.
Yeah, it was one of the pieces to Stonehenge. That was a good catch. Yeah, it was on a TV. And Cochrane explains it was an ancient sacrifice circle, and he's kind of giving Dr. Chalice an inside tour, VIP tour. Maybe that's this package, because he's just letting him kind of freely walk around with him. So Cochrane starts showing him, talks about the power in the rock, and I think he refers to it as like the force, power force. And Dr. Chalice is, you know, of course, concerned about Ellie, and thinks that, you know, she may have been killed. And Cochrane says that he says she was a victim of a misfire. At this point, Cochrane tells Dr. Chalice that he wants to show a demonstration, and from a camera monitor, we have like a room that Ellie is in. Maybe she was dead. I know they had showed her like a gurney. And then we catch up again. The Buddy family still on their factory tour, and they take them to this, looks like a living room set. And so Buddy takes his family in there. It's set up, it has like a couch, TV, and everything. Okay. So they, Buddy and his family, they're in this room, and, the living room set up. So they believe, Buddy believes that they're in there to, that Cochrane wants their opinion. And they have the television, which eventually comes on with the Silver Shamrock commercial. So the kid puts on the mask, and the lyrics, again, like I said, that they change each time the commercial comes on. And this one, you know, it tells them to put the mask on. And as the music starts playing, the pumpkins, you know, the lights flashing, and it's just the same image of the pumpkin, and it's telling them to don't look away, keep watching. And while Buddy's talking to his wife, you know, the kid's head starts melting, and the mask almost kind of like shrinks to his head with the heat, and then like bugs and snakes and everything just start crawling out of their dead kid's head.
But why? 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 Why the crickets and snakes? I don't understand that part. Did he explain it?
I don't think, well.
He said that they used to sacrifice animals and stuff, or I don't know. I had a hard time when he was explaining the whole theory behind his plan. I'll have to like go back and read about it, because I didn't quite understand the whole crickets and snakes thing.
Yeah, well, you said they were Jerusalem?
No, so the second time, like when the kid's head melted, these were actual crickets, like what you would consider like your normal cricket that invades your home or garden. The first time, there was a giant Jerusalem cricket that crawled out of her mouth, and that was it, essentially. And I just don't know what the... Is it supposed to represent plague? I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I guess...
I'm not saying that is it, but, you know, I mean, is it supposed to just be creepy because it's crickets and snakes? I don't know.
I mean, the snakes make sense, I guess, with Ireland, but...
Yeah, because...
Maybe they've had other bugs that were...
Well, okay, so here's the thing, right, with St. Patrick, right? He was the saint who drove out all of the snakes out of Ireland, but technically snakes can't survive in Ireland, so I think that has been debunked. Don't know about crickets either, right? Isn't that what St. Patrick's is all about?
I believe, yeah, driving out the snakes.
Yeah, and snakes can't survive in that type of temperature, so it doesn't make sense. But maybe you're right with the whole, like, Catholic meaning behind it. I don't know.
I wish they would have explained it more. So after the kid's head melts, all the bugs come out. The parents then end up dying as well inside the room. And Cochrane's just in the in that subterranean area and forced, you know, Dr. Ellis to watch, you know, all this take place. So then they jump to the next scenes as they start showing different towns, kids all over. That's, you know, this is a hot item, this mask. Everyone's got to have the mask. So they just show different shots of kids out Halloween night. And everyone, it seems like all of them, I think, had, you know, the witch, the jack-o'-lantern skeleton masks on. Back at the hospital, it's the same doctor that Ellis has been calling and talking to her on the phone about the ashes. And she, I believe she was trying to call Dr. Ellis back, and she's, you know, getting a, the same thing with the operator. The call can't get connected and stuff. And she has like all these parts that she's looking at that look like, you know, like robotic parts. And while she was, you know, and she's investigating this things, one of the men in suit shows up, and he uses a drill to drill right through her ear. So they didn't do the standard eye gouge with thumbs.
Maybe he was bored at that point. He's like, we need to make this more interesting. We need to bring some more Michael Myers into this movie.
He had updated programming.
Get it creative.
Kick it up a notch.
Deprogramming, is that what you said?
He had upgraded programming.
Oh, upgraded programming. I really liked her character too.
Yeah. When we catch back up with Dr. Ellis, he's now tied up in another room. And this is kind of at the point where he's, you know, he starts to question Cochran about, you know, why he's doing this. And, you know, Cochran starts to, he goes into this whole speech about, you know, Dr. Ellis doesn't understand the true origins of Halloween. You know, the people think it's just going out on with different costumes to get candy. And Cochran appears kind of like upset as he's explaining it. And that from basically Ireland, I think he said the Celtic or Celtic lands, that he's upset basically about that he feels Halloween was stolen from his people, that it was their tradition, the festival of the Samhain. I know people say Samhain, but I think Samhain. I mean,
he's kind of right.
It is. Yeah. It's Americanized, just like everything else. So yeah, this is basically his motive for doing all this with the masks. And, you know, he starts talking about the first festival, which was like, I don't know, like 3,000 years ago. And he goes on talking about the blood of animals and children. And as you said earlier about sacrifices, and this was their way, basically of his way of getting back and controlling. I think he said controlling their environment. And he does make references about on this day, this for this Halloween, about the planets being in alignment. And he ends up putting on the skeleton mask on Dr. Ellis. And this is another scene on the TV before the Silver Shamrock commercial where it's the end of the Halloween movie, or it's part of the Halloween movie. And one of the scenes, I think it was, there is a reference to the clock. They do show it briefly. It was around 7:50. So the Silver Shamrock commercial that's going to go out to activate the tags, the masks, is at 9 p.m. So, you know, he's got like an hour and 10 minutes to not get his head melted in. So back at the factory where they have all the equipment set up, they you can see Dr. Chalice on camera trying to get out of the chair he was strapped in. He knows that what happens with the TV, that if, you know, it's going to melt his head. So he starts trying to kick at the TV to turn it off.
This is very much like James Bond. I felt like this was a James Bond setup. And he like MacGyvered his way out of it.
He's a jack of all trades. Yeah, he does manage to kick the TV out though and smash it. And then what did he have? He used the glass from the TV to slice through his restraints. So at this point, it's already after 8 o'clock, and in a diehard fashion, he uses the air duct system to try to get out of the factory. He does manage to sneak out and find a phone. And then he makes a phone call and talks to his... He called his wife initially, to talk basically about what's going on. And then he eventually finds Linda, or not Linda, Linda was his wife, Ellie. She was in another room and manages to free her. So they both make their way back into the that lab set up with all the equipment, and they're getting ready for the broadcast. So Dr. Ellis decides, you know, he's got to sabotage their plans, and he uses, he finds one of the boxes with all the Silver Shamrock tags, and he gets up on like a catwalk. And then as the broadcast is going out, he dumps all the tags over their equipment. And as these tags are hitting the scientists that are working, it's like as it hits them, they just like knocks them out. They get like zapped. The robots, the men in suits, all like deactivate. I think they have all the, I don't know what that is, like their blood, the blue blob stuff or yellow blob stuff comes out of them.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the movie Alien when Ash is dying and he's got all like the goopy stuff coming out.
Oh, that was so nice.
Yeah, yeah, I was that's like, kind of what it reminded me of, but this was like pus colored. It's gross.
Yeah. Yeah, because Alien
it's
like
a
white.
Yellowish, it's like a yellowish color, and then in Aliens it's like white. It just looks like milk, like maybe, I don't know, Greek yogurt.
Yeah. But
this stuff looks pussy. It's gross.
Yeah, they made it the right color. So apparently at this point everyone is like, all of Cochrane's people are dead, and there's like almost like an aerial shot, and the Stonehenge piece that he had stolen starts illuminating. And then there's like a circle that is around like all the workstations. And then it, these beam, two blue beams of light basically zap them. And then
they turn him into face, Mr. Manhattan.
Yeah. His face looked really weird though in that scene. And yeah, it just zaps him and he disappears. So Ellie and Dr. Chalice managed to escape just as the factory is exploding, lighting up the sky. So as they're driving away, Ellie ends up attacking Dr. Chalice, and he ends up losing control of his vehicle and crashes. He then I guess backhands her. Well, he realizes
he
she's a
robot. He punches her square in the face. Like, he gets her good.
Knocks
her
block
off.
Her
arm comes off.
Yeah, her arm, I think, was already missing. It was like the wires are hanging out, and that's when he decks her, and her head pops
off. He hits her with a crowbar.
Yeah.
He whacks her head off, and it just goes flying like a baseball.
Yeah, I think they even there's a brief shot of her on the ground, and her head's just laying next to her.
Which is her, like, obviously buried underneath the set, you know?
Right.
It's like her actual head, which was very unsettling to watch. I just like how her hand still tries to kill him. Like, she just won't stop. You know what I mean? Like, he thinks he's done, and then the hand tries to choke him.
yeah, because it was inside the car, right? And it grabs him. She was still trying. Even after he got the hand off him and he was walking away, like, he goes to look at the body, and her hand that's still attached to her body is clenching at his feet.
So my question is, how did they make her so quickly? Like, how do they have this down to where they can make a full-scale robot in, like, a couple of hours?
Oh, that's a good question.
Has she always been a robot and she was just pretending to be the daughter? But then he had sex with her, so then I'm like, okay, well.
Yeah, it's a good question.
You know?
Robot sex.
I have a feeling, like, she did die and they did, like, you know, make her into a robot. But then I'm like, how are they so quick at doing that?
Well, maybe they perfected at this point. Cochran's got it down.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. It was only, like, an hour.
Dr. Chalice on foot makes it to the, I believe it was the same service station from the beginning of the movie. Because the attendant's there. And kids are, you know, coming up trick-or-treating. They all have the masks on. The attendant that took Ellie's dad is there. He's passing out candy. Chalice is on the phone trying to call and warn people about the broadcast. Well, everything that he's learned as far as the Silver Shamrock's intentions and that, you know, they're going to kill people. He starts calling, I think, one of the radio or broadcast stations. While he's on the phone, one of the kids who was trick-or-treating turns on the TV set. So at this point, it's already 9 o'clock, we know, and now we have the pumpkin with the flashing light. It's playing, and they manage to turn off on one of the stations. However, the kid, once it goes off the air, the kid had just changed the channel, and it's on another one. So Dr. Chalice is pleading with them, telling them it's on the other channel, and he just starts...
It's on channel 3.
He's screaming, channel 3, yeah. And he just screams repeatedly, stop it, as the music intensifies. And
again, not specific enough for us to know what you're talking about, sir.
Right. It's all about vagueness in this movie.
Right. This is why all the children die, is because he says, stop it, instead of turn off channel 3 over and over again.
Maybe communication was an issue at that time.
I think so. I think maybe if they just had like cell phones and text messaging, this would never happen. Kind of like that whole Romeo and Juliet thing. Like if only they had cell phones.
Right. If they catch up with
my own death, KK, see you later.
Right. Yeah, that's how it ends. Just him screaming and the little jingle playing.
So his kids definitely died, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, his wife doesn't.
That's heartbreaking. Yeah, great acting on this guy's part. Man, this is the first time I've seen him in a movie, so I was very impressed with his acting.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's my favorite part, just him screaming, stop it, stop it, stop it.
Yeah, it's a very bleak ending. Not very, it's not
as a it happy should ending. Be.
Yeah.
Ah, well.
As it should be.
Yeah.
All right. That is Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. And this was picked by our very own Azriel. And if you're just joining us or you've been here for a while and you read the description and you've jumped to this part of the podcast, you know this is the part where we give our reviews and ratings. And you may hear some spoilers. We try not to, but sometimes it happens. And I think this week, mine's going to be pretty short. So I'll go ahead and volunteer to go first. And we'll save Azriel for last. And Ariel can go after me. Sound good?
Sounds good.
I remember watching this movie when I was a kid. I was like 11, 12 years old when it came out. I remember I wanted one of those masks, like really bad, because they were like really cool looking masks for the time. I mean, you couldn't get something like that at Kmart or Walmart or wherever you shopped at. When I watched it when I was a kid, you know, it was kind of scary and kind of cool. And we used to tease each other at school that, you know, this was going to really happen type stuff, you know, like you do as kids. And I continued to watch the movie after that, and I've always enjoyed it. But it has been, I mean, honestly, I probably haven't watched it in 20 years, maybe, at least. So this was kind of revisiting the movie. And it kind of lost some of its nostalgia for me a little bit. I still think it's a good movie, and I still recommend you watch it. And I do recommend, like we spoke about earlier, that, you know, you don't see this as a Michael Myers Halloween movie, because definitely not. It's a standalone movie, and I think there's a big consensus it should have been named something else, or just Season of the Witch would have been fine. I think that's why it doesn't get a chance from some people, because you hear about it and you're like, they may not give it a chance or watch it at all. But I say you should watch it. It's a good watch. I would say going into the review before talking with you guys, I had a score in mind, but I'm going to revise that. And this happens like when I talk, we discuss our movies. Sometimes they go up or down during a show for me sometimes. In this one, I'm going to add a point just from hanging out with you two and listening to it again. So I'm going to go ahead and give this 6 smart tow truck drivers out of 10.
Alrighty.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause he was, to get out of that hospital quick. He's like, I don't want no trouble. I'm out.
Yeah. A 6 out of 10, slowly walking backward out of the hospitals.
Yeah.
We call those Irish goodbyes. Yeah, I remember too, when I first watched this film 3 hours ago.
It's fresh in your memory.
And I felt very nostalgic because I saw those masks and I was like, never in my fucking life would I have that in my house. That is the creepiest commercial I have ever seen The music in this movie is quite interesting. I hate it, but I also think it's very, I don't know, I haven't heard it in any other movie, I think, because nobody would want to put this kind of music in their movie. It just sounded like in some parts when the, I guess when the crescendo was happening, it just sounded like a smoke alarm going off in the background. So I thought it was very strange. Definitely did not like it for the, maybe the sound. It seemed like some, I wouldn't say some, it seemed like a lot of the lines and dialogue were ADR. So it kind of spatially takes you out of it because they're talking in a room, but it sounds like when they're recording their lines, they're up close to a microphone. So it kind of trips me up when it sounds like they're closer to you, but they're farther away from the camera. So that always kind of disorients me a little bit. But I do like this film, actually. Those are the only bad parts. The effects are really good, very creepy, exactly what I would expect from a John Carpenter film. It delivered. I liked the characters. Again, Dr. Dan was a very interesting character. HR definitely would have a problem with him, but I thought he was okay. He was cheeky. Everybody, it was kind of weird because then we got introduced to like the Winnebago family. They were kind of kooky. I don't know. There were just all these like weird characters. And even Dr. Dan was like, we got to get out of here. This place is a zoo. You know, it was just kind of wild, but it was fun. Like, I thought it was pretty funny when I wasn't expecting it to be. And I thought it was kind of goofy. But I liked the whole storyline, too. I thought it was pretty engaging. Mm-hmm. There weren't too many slow parts. I think it was equally paced. My whole thing that I would change would just be the sound design and background score. But some of it was pretty 80s, like what you would think of if you're familiar with Stranger Things. So just think of kind of that era of background music. So it definitely had a vibe. It had an aesthetic. I say that I'm glad you guys had me watch this because I've always heard of people referencing this movie when they're talking about the franchise of that one movie that isn't actually a Halloween movie, and it never made sense until now. So I'm glad I finally understand that reference. I'm going to give this movie a 7 out of 10 sacrifice circles.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Nice. Yeah. All right. My turn, right? All right. Yeah, you guys both, summed it up, I think, pretty good, covered everything. I remember seeing it as a kid. I do remember questioning my parents about why Michael Myers wasn't in it. And, you know, looking back at it now, and a lot of people that I talk to that love the Michael Myers franchise, they really do hate this movie. But, you know, going into it, realizing that it's Michael Myers isn't in it, and you keep that in mind and just watch it as a standalone horror film that's taking place on Halloween, you know, I think you would enjoy it. And I don't really find anything wrong with anything as far as the dialogue. I like every part of the movie. It's one that I watch every year. It's aside from the first Halloween movie, but it is my regular that I'll watch. I'll watch it a few times throughout the year, but definitely on Halloween or leading up to Halloween, I do revisit it and watch it again and still enjoy it. The that song does get stuck in my head after I listen to it. Like I have it on my phone saved. So during Halloween, I'll blast the music on. If I take the kids out trick or treating and I move the car and drive around and catch up and then get back out and catch up with them, you know, I have the music playing. So I love it. It's an 80s film, but I think it still holds up. It doesn't deserve that hate that it gets. So, but that I gave this movie a 7.5 robot thumb eye gouges.
All right. Pretty good. Yeah. Check it out. If you get a chance, stick it on your list. And just remember, except for about 2 seconds, Michael Myers is not in this movie.
And for about 2 seconds in the intro, do not watch if you have epilepsy.
Right.
Ah, yeah, flashing.
Yeah. If you're sensitive to that. Yeah. I think too, sometimes during the commercials too, when they flash the pumpkin. All right. And that concludes our Celtic Horror Month. And our theme for the next month is going to be resurrection movies. Resurrection horror. in the first movie we're going to cover. If you want to watch it and then walk through it with us, or if you want to wait and see what we think about it, but put it on your list and get it ready, will be the 1999 film Resurrection, which I haven't seen yet, so I'm looking forward to it. I don't know if Azrael, if you've seen it.
No, this will be my first time.
Okay. And this starring David Cronenberg, but not directed by David Cronenberg.
Right. And this is a pick from Ariel, so looking forward to it. All right, well, I had fun, and I'm glad we finally got Ariel to see Season of the Witch. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just to let y'all know, there is 221 days till Halloween. Halloween. 221 days till Halloween. Hello. I forgot how it ended.
Silver Shamrock. Silver Shamrock.
I already like threw that song out of my head.
Yeah. Halloween. Halloween. Alrighty. If you have a thought of a movie or an idea on a theme or something fun or cool you want to tell us, you can always contact us at storiestodismember@gmail.com, or you can find us on our social medias. Just search for Stories to Dismember. We have Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram. You can also call us and leave a message at 817-405-4196 and let us know your thoughts and all that fun stuff. We love getting messages from you and hearing from you. And
I'm going to call that number and I'm going to disguise my voice and leave a voice.
Just to see if
you're like, Ariel, I know it was you. You had a terrible Irish accent when you left the voicemail.
You sound like a drunk Irishman trying to do a drunk Irishman. All right. Well, I guess we'll see you guys next episode. That's all I got. Unless you guys got anything else.
Later, witches.
And happy Halloween.
Halloween. Halloween. All righty. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to the Stories to Dismember podcast. Please be sure to tell your friends, subscribe, and leave a rating. You can contact us at storiestodismember@gmail.com, and we'd love to hear from you. You can also follow us on TikTok at Stories to Dismember. The music for Stories to Dismember is provided by Windfeather. Can't wait to hang out with you next time. Bye-bye.